Thank you for such a warm welcome. Craig and I brought him along because we can't do this by one. It takes both of us. And I just want to say that we have a very short time with you for a number of reasons. One is that we need to catch a flight tonight to Iceland because Rachel has been recognized by the Lenin Ono Grant for Peace, and we'll be going to Reykjavik to accept that on her behalf. We are going to take just a couple minutes here to share with you a few impressions of our experience. I think most of you are very aware of what our journey has been during almost 10 years. And so we don't have time and we won't go into a lot of details, but we're available to answer any questions and to provide any material that the jury might have at any time. Rachel was killed March 16, 2003. And from that point forward, we sought to find truth, accountability, and justice for what happened to her. That led us, in the beginning, to the U.S. government, seeking help from members of our government. I want to mention one, Congressman Brian Baird, because he took the journey with us, and he didn't start in the same place that all of us are in. But before he left Congress, and he would have been reelected, but he chose not to run again, he made 4 trips to Gaza after Cass led. So in him, I find a great deal of hope for what can happen if we continue to work with people, even though it's frustrating in that process. The position of the U.S. government, written to us in a letter by the Chief of Staff, Colin Powell's Chief of Staff, Lawrence Wilkerson, in 2004, was that there had not been a thorough, credible, and transparent investigation into Rachel's case. And that has remained the position of the U.S. government until this day. We went through every possible effort working with all branches of our government to try to secure a U.S. investigation, which we were told couldn't happen, and to find accountability. And when it became clear that the U.S. was not able to do more, in fact, in 2008, Michel Bernier-Tott, the head of citizen services, acting head of citizen services at the State Department, wrote to us and said that though they continued to ask questions of the Israeli government about Rachel's case, those questions went unanswered or ignored. And it was a little difficult to hear that. And to weigh that with how easy it is for us to send dollars to the U.S. government when we can't even get questions answered about what happens to a U.S. citizen when those weapons are used. But as a result of that, our family filed a civil lawsuit. It was our only recourse in Israel at the time. It happened in 2005. It was not the direction that we originally intended to go, but it was our only recourse. And it was filed when the statute of limitations would run out for us if we didn't. As most of you know, it took until 2010 to hear the first oral testimony, March 10th, 2010. We had 15 court sessions and 23 witnesses, many of them, most of them military, Israeli military. The last oral testimony was on July 10th of 2011. It was a much more extended process than we, in some ways, naively, I think, had knowledge that it would take for this to happen or to occur. On August 28th, as you know, of this year, the judge, Judge Oded Gershon, in Haifa District Court, found that the military had no culpability whatsoever, and found that determined that what happened was an act of war, and that therefore the military had no responsibility. Legally, of course, this has implications for every human being, but for particularly those that are confronted with the Israeli military. He also despite the fact that the U.S. government feels, and we feel that the testimony in court itself confirms that the investigation was completely inadequate, the judge found that it was a model investigation. So there are things to be challenged. I think the good news is that I think the world saw what happened. I think the world heard the verdict. I don't think Haifa has probably had quite a day like it in terms of media attention, in terms of a court lawsuit. But of course, we need your help to continue to keep people focusing not only on what happens to investigation into Rachel's case, but into what happens to all nonviolent activists who are harmed in this situation, and to all civilians. I'll just leave you with a couple of the most disturbing things that came out of the trial. A high-level officer testified that there are no civilians in war. The lead investigator in the case testified that he believed that they were at war with everyone in Gaza, including the peace activist. And this is the person who is charged, we would hope, with conducting some kind of impartial investigation. There's much more that we could share. Our family has managed to translate all of the transcripts. There are over 2,000 pages of testimony, much of it very boring, as you can imagine. But we want to get key pieces of it out to people, and we will be working at how to do that. I'll leave you with one last piece. Our expectation is that the U.S. government will look at the verdict, and will look at the testimony that came out in the court and arrive at their own assessment about what happened. And that's something that we're going to need to pressure them to do, and we will be continuing to do. For this jury, just two things, or maybe one thing. I think it's very important for you to focus on what happens to civilians in this situation and in this conflict. And I think our trial points to the problems, the impunity that the court extends to the military in Israel. And focus upon, as well, those who are nonviolently protesting. There are 22 Palestinians are nonviolently protesting this, have for years and years in so many different ways. But there are 22 people that I know have been identified, Palestinians, as dying, nonviolently protesting the wall in the West Bank. And they all must be remembered. We must have accountability and attention, acknowledgement of what has happened to them. So for the Israelis who come and stand with them, their rights need to be protected. So the rights of the civilians and the rights of the nonviolent activists who are there in support of them. Thank you for your time. I'll let Craig close.
Well, I'll just say a couple of thoughts. The day after Rachel was killed, Prime Minister Sharon promised President Bush a thorough, credible, and transparent investigation. So that's coming from the highest regions of government. And it's still, as Cindy said, our government's position that sort of investigation has not happened. And even though we did file a lawsuit is not a substitution for an investigation. In fact, it's incredibly hampered by not having an investigation. I think that's important. But one of the things that came out of the trial, and I can't go into all the details, but because there was a little bit of different video released in trial than we had before that, it's very clear that the report that was given to our government included a picture in which there was a PowerPoint presentation given to our government after Rachel was killed. It included a picture that showed, and it was just a split second of a video that they had. And then the Israelis said, here was where Rachel's body was. You couldn't see any body there. And it says, here's the bulldozer, here's the mound of earth. See, she couldn't be seen. Well, when you get a little more video, you can see that when the ambulance came, they walked right past that spot and went to where Rachel really was, a little bit farther out towards the border. So that was not the bulldozer that killed Rachel. It was not the direction the bulldozers were traveling, and that was not the place where Rachel's body lay. So when a promise was given from the highest level of government to the highest level of government, it resulted in a lie. And believe me, a father cannot enforce the promise given from a head of state to head of state. The other thing, I'll just finish up on a thought that we had at lunchtime, because it struck me that maybe this tribunal can do what, or at least help to do what so many governments have failed to do. But in a time right now where we're thinking about another time of having preemptive war, it's time for preemptive peace. It's time for preemptive justice. So we can't do, I don't know what justice means if, you know, if you back over with your car, you hit my car, I know you can replace my car. When you run over my daughter, I don't know what justice means that way. You have to prevent it from happening. And so we have to be preventive and preemptive in our justice, not just reacting after the fact. It's very important to get the facts out after the fact, but then we have to say, what are we going to do next? And good luck. Thank you.
Thank you.